You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode number 107 of the Fabulous Peltoncast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you live from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks.
And we have a lot to get to right at the beginning. We have things to pour out. We have toast to make. So we need to get to our beer quickly.
We absolutely do need to do that. What do we have today?
We have with us today, via Kona Brewing Company in Hawaii, the Hanalei Island IPA. It's an ale brewed with passion fruit, orange, and guava. They call that Pog in Hawaii.
They do. That's a fun fact. It turns out there is no island named Hanalei. The island just refers generally to the Hawaiian concept, but Hanalei Bay in Kauai, the namesake of this. And
I like the research that you did there.
Oh, you got to do some research. Their description is, kayak the stunning Hanalei Bay and ease your way through the tropical paradise of northern Kauai. Refresh your senses with this crisp island IPA. The subtle bitterness of hops is balanced by passion fruit, orange, and guava. Easy does it.
I would be happy to kayak Hanalei Bay.
Would you? Have you ever kayaked before?
No, but I mean, done? I guess more what I'm saying is I would like to be in Hawaii.
Same.
Look, if I were in Hawaii, I wouldn't be doing any kayaking, but I'd like to be around Hanalei Bay.
You'd just like to have the option to kayak? It's all about that. All right, I guess I shouldn't drink this because as you mentioned, we have several toasts. We're going to start with a sad one. We're pouring one out this week for the late, great Chuck Knox. One of the legendary coaches in Seahawks history, is the third coach the team ever had, led the Seahawks to their first playoff appearance in 1983, reaching the AFC Championship game that season, and four playoff appearances in his nine seasons as head coach in Seattle, remains second in career Seahawks wins behind Mike Holmgren, one ahead of Pete Carroll. We'll see if he gets there this year. I'm not feeling great about it.
Pretty much the first legendary Seahawks coach, right?
Yeah, I mean, Jack Patera enjoyed some success early on, but again, did not ever get to the playoffs. So.
Kind of the three pillars of Seahawks coach would be Chuck Knox, Mike Holmgren, and then now Pete Carroll.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Well, RIP.
Yeah. All right, next on the list, a toast to Nick Collison's career. Mm. The former Sonics big man who started his career here in Seattle is a lottery pick by the Sonics. Spent 15 seasons in the NBA, all with the same organization. After the move to Oklahoma City, spent his first five seasons in Seattle, four of them on the court. And in the ESPN piece he penned with Royce Young, said, "Key Arena was loud and the city was with us. I absolutely loved it. I love Seattle and I've spent every summer there since I was drafted. I love being a Supersonic and I hate how it ended there. I had four coaches in my 5 years and then Howard Schultz sold the team to Clay Bennett." And then later in that story goes on to say, "I learned an important lesson. The NBA is a business and all the parties involved will always act in their own best interests. The fans in Seattle deserved better and I hope they get a team back someday soon." So, appreciate it.
Toast to Nick. I mean, We always liked him. And it's rare that you see a player who plays their entire career across only two teams.
Yes, that's a good point. I would say that Nick Collison is I guess there's two players in the NBA who would recognize me at this point. Nick Collison.
Only two players in the league who would recognize you.
Yeah, I mean, the other players who played in Seattle, like Kevin Durant now, Jeff Green, who are the only two left now.
And Jason Richardson's gone.
And well, he didn't recognize me. He definitely did not recognize me.
I feel like he was up late at night doing research on you. He was just literally asking, "Who the hell is Kevin Belton?"
Like, I got a lot of questions about that last week after the Jordan LeBron piece, for the record. But Jamal Crawford is the other one in the league who knows who I am. So,
I'm trying to think if there are any others.
No, I mean, they're not.
And none of the Husky players would know who you were?
No.
Because you don't talk to the Husky players enough?
No.
Is this an insult to Howard Schultz here, that I had four coaches in my 5 years and then Howard Schultz sold the team to Clay Bennett?
I mean,
it's definitely not a compliment to Howard Schultz.
Yeah, he's implicated him in the move. I don't think that's a hot take here.
No, I like it. I'm for it.
I tend to think Howard Schultz's role in the move is, I think he tends to get a little bit too much blame, but
that's for another time.
That's a subject for another day. Anyway.
I mean, we have to have like a full 10-year pod coming up here, right?
Oh, we'll do something.
In less than a month, one full podcast just on the Sonics move.
We've got a month and a half still.
And then you can assign your blame to all of these other people.
Ooh, okay. It's going to be like 100, a list of like 100 people. I may be somewhere on there. If I had written better stories, the team would still be here.
If you would have been happier with that $5 Starbucks gift card.
I didn't have a problem with it. I was literally just happy to be there. Anyways, Nick Collison was awesome to cover. He's a great dude. A great ambassador for Seattle, I would say.
His wife was my wedding planner.
That is his ex-wife. Yes, that is accurate. So very happy for him to have been able to end his career on his terms. Most role players do not get that opportunity, but got to set up this whole retirement announcement that was on ESPN and get feted. It was a great moment. Nick was trending in Seattle. I saw that on Twitter. So that was fun.
All right.
And look forward to hopefully seeing him around in Seattle this summer. I mean,
so he still lives in Seattle.
Yeah.
Good for Nick Collison.
I mean, he legitimately loves Seattle. Like, I don't think anyone took the move of the team harder than Nick. I think that's
even you
among the players. Yes. Despite the fact that then he spent his entire career, the remainder of his career in Oklahoma City. All right, lastly. So this one kind of turned tonight. I had in here a toast to the major league debut of Brandon Mann, who I went to high school with. Did not realize that I overlapped with him in high school until this week, because we were finding out about how long he has been out of high school and pitching in the minor leagues, which is 16 plus years.
Wow!
He turns 34 on Wednesday. He was drafted in the 27th round by Tampa Bay in 2002 out of Mount Rainier High School in Des Moines. Pitched for 16 different teams between the minor leagues, independent leagues, and Japan. Reached AAA for the first time this season, and then was called up by the Texas Rangers over the weekend, making his MLB debut on Sunday, and then pitching in Seattle in his second appearance.
Unbelievable.
On Tuesday night. And then things took a dark turn.
I mean, this is like, before we get to the dark turn, you want to talk about grit, right? You want to get your Angela Duckworth on? Like, this is grit. 16 different teams. He was drafted in 2002.
I mean, and for a long period of time, like, he had advanced no higher than like high A ball, or, you know, was pitching in independent leagues. It's hard to get from there to the major leagues.
He must have heard a lot of people telling him to give up the dream.
Undoubtedly so. I mean, you're in your mid-30s and like, you're still making almost nothing. As we know, the way that major league teams don't finance the salaries of minor leaguers, it's shameful in this country.
And then today in Seattle, he imagined that all of those people telling him to give up his dreams were Nelson Cruz.
So he comes in as a lefty reliever and promptly hits Nelson Cruz in the foot. Nelson Cruz has to leave the game. Fortunately, x-ray is negative. He was diagnosed with a foot contusion, not anywhere close to the worst news of the day.
So wait,
for the Mariners.
This is the same person who hit Ichiro during spring training, right?
Wait, is that right?
Is that
right. I think that is right.
What is Brandon Mann's problem?
He's upset.
Has he never been in the Mariners organization throughout
these 16
teams? He has not been
in the Mariners organization.
So he fucking hates the Mariners, right? If he could go back in time and being Ken Griffey Jr., he would.
Wow. Strong words.
I mean, look, there's no other, all the evidence we have is that he's beating every single Mariner he can.
That is true.
He would have beaned Robinson Cano had he had the chance.
Well, anyways, a toast to him for making it to the major leagues. I mean, almost 34. That's incredible. That's much older than Rich Amaral was when he debuted. Actually, he had debuted a lot before. He was a 31-year-old rookie, I guess. He was like 29 tops. That's nothing.
Rich Amaral?
Yeah, he was a baby when he came up.
Wow. I just can't even imagine that. And how old was the person in the NBA who, was his name Andre Holmes? Is that right?
That was not his name. Andre Owens, I believe. Is that right?
This seems like something you should know off the top of your head.
It was a while back.
It was not that long ago.
Andre Ingram. Andre Owens is another player. Andre Ingram is not that old.
He just looked much older because he was prematurely graying.
That is accurate. He is 32.
32. Yeah. Well, I mean, this Brandon Mann story, I don't think it's being covered in the same way that the Andre Ingram story was being covered, but this is something.
Yeah, I mean, it's more common. I mean, just with NBA players go overseas and then, you know, kind of give up the dream that way, as opposed to, you know, where you're still striving to get to the major leagues in baseball. I mean, obviously, he spent some time overseas in Japan, but it's not quite the same.
All right. Well, we hope that the Mariners never have to see Brandon Mann again.
For their own safety. Should we get into talking about tacos and burritos in this week's review?
Absolutely.
So once again, we are not talking about Marination. This time it is not my fault. I actually successfully went to Marination and posted about it on the Peltoncast Instagram.
Nice work.
I'm actually going back to Marination later this week, making it a twofer, although I don't think, because my normal order does not include tacos, so I'm not going to order tacos next time.
Oh, and you got, wait, what is your normal order?
Well, I think we mentioned it's the pork sandwich and then a Spam slider.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But, well, I think I'm going to go tomorrow. The life got in the way and I couldn't make it to Marination over the weekend.
That will happen. But the good news is we went to a second location. We thought we were going to double up on reviews. We're not able to do that, but we are able to bring you a review, and that's for El Burrito Loco in downtown Renton, a place that we've been going for a number of years now, but actually hadn't been in a while.
On and off in a couple of different locations. It moved from the outskirts of downtown Renton to officially downtown Renton.
Which is like 2 blocks.
It moved about 2 blocks away.
No, it's more than that.
Somehow the traffic seems to have gotten smaller, despite them being more centrally located. It's a very difficult location to get to because there are a bunch of one-way streets.
I mean, you could say that about most of downtown Renton, then. They're all one-way streets.
Would you agree with this assessment, though?
It was a little convoluted getting there.
It was convoluted, and I've been like 3 times since they've moved, and I don't think I've ever seen more than one other person in there.
Well, presumably they must be scaring up some business to stay in business.
There we go. El Burrito Loco is a place where in the past, I think, I thought pretty favorably of their burrito.
Yeah, I mean, so we've informally been searching for Seattle's best burrito for a long period of time.
Always searching for Seattle's. Yeah, I mean,
we're always competing.
Been searching for the best of everything in Seattle for a long time.
Why, anytime. What else would you be doing with your life but doing that?
We've also been competing for the best podcast hosts, but nobody has awarded us that yet.
Oh, no. We've gotten nowhere close to that, let's say. But yeah, I think we went there before Tacos Chuki's came on the scene, or at least before we had been there.
Yeah.
And at that point, it was like, okay, this is a pretty damn good burrito that is located, at that point, even closer to where you lived at that point.
What do we think now?
Okay, so we had slightly different orders. You had just a regular burrito mm-hmm. with al pastor. I had the California burrito with al pastor, which you did not realize was an option.
And you didn't inform me it was an option. We were together.
I didn't realize.
You could have said something along the lines of, hey, are you going to order the al pastor burrito? Or, there's the al pastor burrito.
You did get the al pastor burrito. You mean
California. Oh, sorry. There's the California burrito. Because I wanted the California burrito.
And then I offered at one point to split the two of them. Since we both had al pastor. But then it turned out the first half that I ate was like the half that, and this violated one of my burrito rules of having even consistency.
Rule number two.
What's rule number one?
Rule number one is you want them to be grilling their own tortillas.
Oh, okay. That's a good rule. The sour cream was all in the back half of the burrito. So it was extremely dry in the front half. And then I got about halfway through and I was like, oh, this actually is pretty good now that I've got some sour cream and it's not so incredibly dry.
You got a little bit more California.
I mean, the California was there all along because that's the French fries.
The French fries were at the top, but it was a little bit dry.
Yes.
So the consistency was off.
It was off.
What were your thoughts otherwise?
I mean, the meat was only okay, I would say.
I really got almost nothing from the meat.
We also got to El Pastor Molitas to give those a try.
Which also were just fine, I would say.
I thought their tortilla was not good.
It just didn't...
We've never had the tacos there, but based on the tortilla on the Molita, I would assume that they are not that good.
Hmm.
So I would stick to the burrito.
The burrito that I had, just the plain pastor burrito, it's kind of just a lot of rice and beans. And the meat didn't really stand out. I mean, to me, it's so hard when Tacos Chuki's exists in the world. Where it's like the Tacos Chuki's burrito is just the perfect meal, right? And I have this and I'm like, it's kind of dry. The meat doesn't really do that much for me. It was kind of just fine. Like I didn't not enjoy it. You know, right. I'd probably eat the burrito again. It's still a burrito and burritos are great. But it just, when I'm looking at it with a more critical eye, it didn't meet the muster of what I would be looking for in a burrito and a search for Seattle's best burrito.
Yeah, I mean, the bar is intentionally set high here. You're kind of talking me down on my rating. Where are you going here?
I'm going 75.
Wow, that is very low compared to... I was going to go 85.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you probably had a better burrito than I had.
That is probably true.
So, you know, because you had guac in yours?
No.
Oh, no guac. Just sour cream.
Oh, there might have been some guac. I don't know. If so, it was limited.
Did you see Mike Bates' photo today of the Peltoncast order at Tacos Chuki's?
I sure did.
God, I was just looking and I was like, I want this right now.
Yeah. Of course you do.
Every time. A lot of people tweeted us photos of Tacos Chukis. Or take at PeltonCast on Instagram, which, by the way, you should go follow at PeltonCast on Instagram. We're posting almost all of these burritos that we're having, plus lots of other food.
Unless we forget, because we're too hungry.
You can tell how hungry we are based upon whether we've Instagrammed about it. There's, you know, I would say 60% of the meals that I eat are now being posted to the PeltonCast Instagram.
That sounds about right.
And I'm like, Pop-Tart for breakfast. I'll be like, Shobani fruit on the bottom cup. That's all happening on there. But you should go follow PeltonCast on Instagram. Great content happening there. Where was I going with this?
Hashtag content. Well, do we have any more thoughts on El Burrito Loco?
It's fine. I would certainly recommend going there. I just don't think it's in the competition for the best burrito in Seattle. Oh, what I was saying is we see a lot of Tacos Chukis. This is where I was going with
so
this.
Much Tacos
People Chukis. Are tagging us. People are tweeting at us. Every single time, I immediately want to go to Tacos Chukis. I'm like, I still want people to do this. It's the same kind of sensation I have with In-N-Out, where I see a lot of In-N-Out throughout the day. I'm like, it's like porn.
How much In-N-Out are you seeing throughout the day?
Just any time
that searching any person,
any time that any person on Twitter goes to In-N-Out, I feel like I end up seeing it, and I'm like, I want to eat that.
Yeah, that's all
right
fair.
Right now.
Okay, well, you've heard enough from us about tacos and burritos. So we've decided to get a slightly different perspective this week. We have a special guest with us here to talk tacos today. It's not talking taco time yet. That's coming soon.
I feel like it's never coming.
It's coming.
You keep telling me it's coming. I'm so ready to talk taco time.
It's coming before the Detox album. I guarantee it.
Yeah, because I'm ready to talk taco time.
Well, we have a guest with us, back by popular demand. Ready to talk taco time. Always ready to talk taco time.
Not ready to talk taco time.
Apparently not that ready to talk taco time. But to talk with us about his favorite tacos, we have Baby Fantasy Genius. Hello.
Hey.
So we wanted to have you on today to talk. We know that you have strong feelings about various taco places, and we wanted to get your vote on what the best tacos or burritos in Seattle are. And I wanted to go through maybe three or four locations in particular that you've been to. Let's start with just your general thoughts on these places, and let's start with Taco Bell.
Wait a minute. Is it how good you're doing?
How good do you think Taco Bell is?
Eh.
Oh, no.
I don't actually like it that anymore.
And eh?
I don't really like it.
You don't like Taco Bell?
Well, I still kind of like it, but not really that as much as I used to.
Oh, wow. Getting worse. As he's getting older, his palate is getting more refined.
And yet your palate still loves Taco Bell.
Has not changed. Okay, another one that we don't have to spend too much time with, but what are your feelings about Chipotle?
Chipotle is still pretty good.
What is your go-to order at Chipotle?
I don't know, maybe a giant quesadilla.
Like a full-size adult quesadilla?
Yeah.
And do you eat that whole thing?
Sometimes I don't.
Have you ever had the tacos at Taco Time? Or at Chipotle?
Mm-hmm. I have.
Thoughts?
Actually, no, I haven't.
Oh, well, you should try them sometime. They're good. Okay. So there's those two out of the way. Let's get into it here, though.
Let's get serious. Let's get real.
Okay, so tell us about Taco Time.
Second.
Number two. What is your go-to order at Taco Time, the entire order?
I don't know. Maybe like, I think a kid's self burrito, and some Mexi fries.
And what else?
Nothing else.
And a Sprite?
Yeah, Sprite.
You got to take advantage of the machine with the different drink flavor options, right?
Yep, vanilla. That's what I like.
Vanilla Sprite.
Yep.
Do you have feelings about the ice at Taco Time?
What do you mean the ice?
I guess that's a no.
Wow.
We're going to talk about the ice on Talking Taco Time. Don't you doubt it, okay?
Yes. Really? The ice tastes the same everywhere.
It tastes icy.
Wow. I do not know if people are going to agree with you about that.
That may be the hottest take you've unleashed yet.
Well, at least that's what I think.
All right. Well, maybe you haven't had enough ice in your day. Okay, so if Taco Time is number two, what is number one?
Taco Chukis.
Wow!
Now that's a palate. That is a palate.
I imagine that all of you like that one.
That's a fair assessment.
It is true. What is your go-to order at Tacos Chukis?
A quesadilla with a lime.
And this quesadilla with lime at Tacos Chuki's is so good that it surpasses the kids' soft burrito meal at Taco Time.
Yep. This is getting really funny.
Where do you feel like, let's say, all of the foods that you've eaten in your entire life, where do you think Tacos Chuki's ranks?
Probably, at least like, probably in the top 10.
Okay, top 10? Not top 5?
Top 10, yeah.
Okay. What is at the top of the list of all foods?
I don't know. I think it's probably Ivers.
Ivers? Interesting.
At least around Ivers, probably.
We've been talking about how we haven't really talked Ivers on the podcast. It's a Seattle fixture.
Wait, fixture? What is that?
That means it's been around long before you were born. Long before we were born.
Wait, what?
Believe it or not, there was a time before we were born.
Well, there was a long time before you were born.
Yeah, was there?
How old do you think Kevin is?
35.
You're way too smart for a kid. Who else is in your top 10, though?
Well, Taco Time is definitely in the top 10.
So Taco Time and Tacos Chuki, Tacos Time and Tacos Chuki's are both in your top 10.
Yeah, the 10th is Taco Time.
Okay.
I really want to hear this whole list. We've got one in 10 established, and I know that Tacos Chuki's is somewhere in there.
This is tough on the spot. Maybe we should bring Baby Fantasy Genius back at a later time to give us his full top 10 after he's like written it down.
Of course, Ivers. You already know that, right?
Yep, we got that. It was your number one.
Is there a chance that Tacos Chuki's is number two, though?
Yeah, it is in the top 5. I think it's probably either the 5th, the 4th, or the 3rd.
What's number two, then? You're teasing this number two.
Number two is Ivers. I think Tacos Chuki's actually first.
Oh, wow. We walked it all the way up to number one.
This is like us with the tavern burger. It started out losing in the semifinals, and all of a sudden it's number one.
But you've heard it here first. Tacos Chuki's, not only the best tacos, not only the best burritos in Seattle, not the best bolitas in Seattle, the best food in Seattle, according to Luca. You have no reply to this?
Yeah, I have no reply.
Okay. Well, thanks for taking the time to join us this week. I think we're past your bedtime.
Wait, what did you just say?
I said I don't really have a bedtime.
While we have you here, we just need to get a little bit more in here. What songs have you been liking lately?
Pretty much every song I know by The Weeknd.
Oh, every song by The Weeknd.
Not every song, but most of the songs I know.
What would you say are the top songs by The Weeknd of yours right now?
Of course, Pray For Me, Party Monster, False Alarm, and Starboy.
Those are your top Weeknd songs. What about on, because the Pray For Me is on the Black Panther soundtrack, right?
Yeah, but it is by The Weeknd.
What are your favorite, like, three songs on the Black Panther soundtrack?
X, The Ways, and Pray For Me.
Not All the Stars.
Not that it's All the Stars anymore.
He's also grown past that. Grown out of Taco Bell and All the Stars. You know, it's too mainstream of a hit, I understand.
Wait, what else are we talking? Are supposed to talk about?
Whatever you want. Whatever you want to talk about. Look, this might be on your college entrance exam, so you never know.
Yeah, because maybe I even get to have more fun at Husky football games than I thought I would.
If you were a student, you're saying?
No, not even if I was a student. Still, just learn at my Husky games when we get to play at halftime.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes that doesn't end well, though, when we play at halftime.
Yep, but yeah, Dad, can you say why I'm going to have more fun?
Because Luca found out that one of his friends also has season tickets to Husky football.
Oh, yeah. And they're in the same section as us, too, right?
They're like 10 sections ahead of us.
Well, the row's ahead of us.
They're in the East End zone.
The same section.
Do you want to say why sometimes it doesn't go well playing football at halftime in the Husky games?
Because we don't have a ball.
Is that why?
Yeah, well, sometimes we do, sometimes we don't.
That is true.
I thought you were.
Sometimes, but when you knocked over that kid, and he said, "Thanks for saying sorry."
That's where I was going. When I knocked over that kid, and he said, "Thanks for saying sorry."
I've already said my piece on this issue.
Look,
At that point, like, me and Katie were, like, just chilling in the car, and you guys were, like, like, arguing.
That could be after any Husky game, but yes. Particularly after that one.
There's actually another thing that is exciting. There's, like, two things. Actually, three. One, I get to go to the game. Two, a third grade friend is also there. And three, I also get to go to Mod Pizza usually after.
Pagliacci Pizza.
Pagliacci, yeah, Pagliacci.
Which is better, Pagliacci Pizza or Mod Pizza?
Pagliacci.
Wow. I also love his pronunciation of Pagliacci. He pronounces it perfectly, right?
The G is silent. The G is silent, Luca. You know.
Okay, one last question before you go to bed. Do you like Bruce Springsteen?
Kind of.
I thought you were going to say no. Do you like Kanye West?
Kind of. No, I don't.
All right, go to bed. That's it. Go to bed.
I think it's a reasonable take at this point.
Dad, just come on. Listen to mom. He wears a Trump hat.
I believe you just got sunned by your son.
Thank you, Luca. Now you should actually go to bed. There were some takes there. After that, baby fantasy genius was in his bed and said to me, he was like, I had the best takes, right, Dad? We've raised a monster.
I think he's a podcasting prodigy. Like, how old were we at the first time we went on a podcast? Way older than six.
Yeah. I was like 29 years old the first time I podcasted.
With all that experience, he's going to get his 10,000 hours extremely early.
I didn't have my first take until I was like 30.
That's probably true. And it wasn't that good either. Do we have anything to say on the NBA playoffs this week?
Ugh.
That sounds about right.
Boo.
Not really any update this week on the NHL to Seattle front, besides for Vegas Golden Knights continuing to play in the Western Conference Finals in the NHL. So I guess we move along to the segment you've been waiting for.
Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at you. I just can't believe this Cano suspension. I mean, what are we talking about here? We're not even talking about PEDs. We're talking about a diuretic. Not PEDs, a diuretic, a masking agent, and every single person on the internet acts as though Robinson Cano has been confirmed as taking steroids. This drives me crazy. It's like a society where if you're suspended, you are immediately guilty, right? There's no confirmation that he took anything. People just immediately ignore the excuse that Robinson Cano gave. Or the reason that he gave.
Excuse me in a good word there.
The reason that Robinson Cano gave, and they go right to judgment. Right to judgment. And then also, like, hand-wringing and silent head-waving. Baseball is so annoying about this. And then people all of a sudden being like, well, now we won't get into Cooperstown. It's like, first off, who gives a shit about your stupid Hall of Fame baseball? No one cares. Except when Edgar Martinez isn't in it. But then we care a lot. Just like, why is that immediately what we think about when it comes to this? It's like we have to think about it in these grand terms because it's baseball. It's like, you know what, baseball? Attendance is down for, I looked this up, the 300th year in a row in baseball. They say that the Mariners games, the Mariners are at 50% capacity for the season. And I have watched these games and that is very generous. They're at like 9% capacity for most of these games. And you know why? Because baseball is boring. And you know why? Because people get on their high horse about PEDs. You know when baseball was good? In the 90s! When people were hitting home runs. Baseball was good when Ken Griffey Jr. walked the face of the earth.
Griffey did it clean.
And my boy, Alex Rodriguez, walked the face of the earth. That was when baseball was good. There was a heyday. Did you see the thing earlier this week? There was a Deadspin story about who the most famous baseball player is. Like, 8 of the 10 players aren't even in the current major leagues.
Sounds about right.
It's like, I could not, if Mike Trout walked by me on the street.
Everyone's used that already.
I'm just saying, I would have no idea who it is. Because baseball's the worst.
You done?
No. Because also, we have to consider the other end of this. And that is what it means for the Mariners. And it means, we talked about this last year, confirmed cursed.
Season starts looking pretty good for the Mariners. All of a sudden, boom, down goes Cano. Boom, with the injury first. Boom, Nelson Cruz gets hit by your boy Brandon Mann intentionally. Everything that could possibly go well for the Mariners immediately turns to shit. Because they're the Mariners. Longest drought in North American professional sports at the moment of making the playoffs. Because they're the Mariners. And it'll continue for another year because things were looking too good. And the baseball gods had to take down Robinson Cano. And I'll tell you why. Let me just say, if you're thinking about standing in the way of basketball coming back to Seattle, if you're the Seattle hockey team, if you're the Seahawks, if you're the Sounders, and you want to stand in the way of those things, you better be prepared to have your organization go down in flames. Because this isn't the curse of the Bambino. This is the curse of the Sonics that is happening right now to the Mariners. It was retroactively happening even before the Sonics moved.
For like 7 years.
They knew it was coming. Even before they opposed a new team coming, that is what is happening right now at this very moment. Any person who stands in the way, David Stern, the Seattle Mariners, where are they at right now? Think about it.
you good?
I really just also don't like this thing about baseball where it's like people are so happy about this happening. Or like...
People should be happy about this. I've considered a lot of hot takes. One of them is that the Mariners got off lucky here because they don't have to pay Cano his entire $24 million salary for this.
They still have to pay him next year.
By the way,
and also they're
good news. Only 5 years left on that 10-year deal. Who could have seen that that was going to work out poorly? What a stunning development of the 10-year contract might be an issue for the Mariners. Oh my goodness. That's not a curse, by the way. That's mismanagement. That's not a curse.
Maybe Howard Lincoln was cursing them from the inside. It wasn't actually him cursing them by opposing the Sonics. It was him cursing them by running the team.
Maybe it was the same poor logic that caused them to offer Robinson Cano a 10-year, $240 million deal. Also led them to oppose the arena.
Performative disappointment is what I hate the most. Right? I hate performative grief also when famous people die and everybody is so distraught about it. But I really hate performative disappointment. And there was so much of that happening today.
I really didn't even see that much about it. I mean, I saw performative disappointment about like what this means for the 2018 Mariners. I didn't necessarily see it directed at Cano.
I could see legit disappointment happening for the 2018 Mariners. Look, if it means that their chances of making the playoffs are less than they are. And by the way, if people haven't noticed, people who think the Mariners are going to make the playoffs here, one of the Yankees, the Red Sox, is going to win the wild card over there in the AL East. And one of the Angels or the Astros are going to be the other wild card. Yep. The Mariners aren't in the mix here. We're just because they had this nice little piddly season. What are their playoff odds right now? 4%?
Oh, they're probably better than that.
They're probably just a little bit better than the Mariners' attendance has been.
Wow, these takes are too hot, I would have to say. But the whole, like, masking agent business, like, first off, look, it is made very explicitly clear to every athlete in every major pro sport what is banned and what is not, and very clear that you are responsible for whatever you ingest, whether it is prescribed to you by a doctor or not. Like, if it doesn't even matter whether he was actually doping and using this as a diuretic or not. Like, you still fucked up by testing positive. You got to be, like, I mean, you have to be extraordinarily careful. Your body is your employment. Like, this is, you know, you can't just be unaware of what you're doing. So I don't find that a valid excuse, even if it's an explanation. You have nothing to say on them?
Not guilty. He who does not feel me is not real to me. Therefore, he doesn't exist. So, poof! Vamoose, son of a bitch.
Well, okay. I mean, the good news is...
Same thing I would have said when it happened to Brandon Brown or Richard Sherman.
Richard Sherman, that's a long story.
Also, the thing about it tainting their like careers or whatever, I learned today. I did not know that this had happened, that both Nelson Cruz and Dee Gordon were suspended for... PED use or violation of substance abuse before this. Did you even know that?
I probably knew that at some point, but then I had forgotten about it because
it tainted them forever.
I don't care about baseball.
I just feel like that wasn't the dialogue around those players either, though.
Right? No, it was not. Mariners playoff odds at 13.5% is of Tuesday before this interminable game against the Rangers comes to an end, which is now heading two outs. The Mariners still have a chance in the bottom of the 10th. We'll see if it ends before this podcast does, which has also been called interminable by many people.
Baby Fantasy Genius, one of them.
Do we have anything else on the Mariners?
I still want to do a thing. Do we have time?
All right.
Okay, so these are the original hot takes that were planned.
I'm sure you can't save them because you have so many takes that you're going to need to get off new ones next week. You couldn't possibly have saved
them. Just won't be relevant timeline-wise.
All right.
So did you see LeBron James after game one of the Eastern Conference Finals?
The play-by-play that he delivered from memory, only once calling Jordan Clarkson Jordan Crawford?
But intentionally.
Probably.
He kind of even took it to a new level. If LeBron is able to remember exactly what happened in a sequence of events that happened at like the beginning of a game, in a long game, right? And this would have been hours after that happened.
It was probably an hour after it.
If you were to ask me, like, let's say that I'm playing in a basketball game to 15. If you ask me the sequence of events that happened at the beginning of that game, I would have no idea what happened.
Yeah, that's probably the only difference between when you play basketball and when LeBron plays basketball.
I can't remember the score most of the time.
That it is extraordinarily difficult to remember the score.
Right, because you're just focused on all these other things that are going on. So LeBron just like rattles off every single thing that happened like perfectly. He was also wearing kind of like the nerd glasses.
I don't know what his look was, but it was a look.
It was kind of amazing. So I thought we should test how much you are like LeBron.
Get very similar.
And basketball-wise, I think we know how you're like LeBron.
Do we?
Not at all.
Okay.
But we should test memory-wise how you're like LeBron. I have not prepped you on what this is going to be, but I wanted to see. I thought...
How well I could remember.
Going back into Mariners history, okay. Right? And this is going to be very specific. I don't know if you're going to get this. Can you name the starting lineup for the 1995 play-in game against the California Angels that the Mariners played, winning? I believe they won that. What was the score? Do you know?
3-2. I want to say
9-1. Not even close.
Oh, wow. they really got a lot of runs after that Luis Soho bases clearing double, huh?
Can you name the starting lineup for that game? Who pitched? And I'll give you bonus points if you can name the lineup in order.
Well, in batting order?
In batting order.
Okay, so I assume Vince Coleman led off and played left field.
Yes.
Joey Cora batted second and played second.
Nope. Already off.
Really?
Well, I mean, that's in the batting order. He did play second.
Oh, okay.
He did play second and start at second.
He would have hit second in the game against the Yankees, in game five against the Yankees, right? Because he was on base before Griffey, right? Am I remembering that correctly? I'm pretty sure he was involved in that final inning. Okay. I mean, I don't... If it wasn't Cora hitting second, I guess Felix Fermin? Or Soho. Soho, I mean.
Okay. Playing what?
Shortstop.
Okay.
Then Griffey in center.
Mm-hmm.
Edgar in DH.
Mm-hmm.
Buehner in right.
Okay.
Hitting six would have been Tino at first.
Nope.
Wait, really?
I mean, he was playing first, but he was not hitting six.
Blowers at third, then Tino at first, then Dan Wilson at catcher, and then Cora must have been in
there. All right, so you named the lineup perfectly. Okay. I guess you did mention Felix Fermin in there.
I had a brief second there, and then Randy Johnson was pitching in that game.
All right, that's not bad.
Against Mark Langston.
Was that Mark Langston?
I'm pretty sure it was.
I was going to say it would be extreme extra credit if you were able to name anybody from, or if you were able to name the Angels starting lineup.
I mean, I could name a few people. I mean, Tim Salmon.
Yeah, you can name the obvious ones.
Jim Edmonds.
There was one that I had not remembered existing.
Wally Joyner was at first. Is that right?
Nope. JT Snow.
Oh, okay.
Gary DeSarcino was the one who I'd completely forgotten about.
Nice. At shortstop?
I think in 95 that Joey Cora was also hitting ninth. Let me see. No, Joey Cora was hitting second in 95.
This is, you mean in game five?
In game five.
Okay. That's why I remembered it.
Okay. How about, when can you name, so there were some pinch hitters and pinch runners in that game. Game five against the Yankees in the division series.
Okay, well...
There were three pinch hitters and one pinch runner.
All right, well, Doug Strange definitely pinch hit in that game.
Yes.
Did he pinch hit for Dan Wilson?
Yes.
And then that means that Chris Widger came in at catcher?
Yes, he didn't hit, though.
A-Rod was on deck getting ready to hit for him. Or A-Rod was on deck when that play happened. He, you know, I guess someone pinch hit for Felix, for Luis Soho, right? I believe Warren Newson pinch hit at some point in that game.
Wow, you got correct? Warren Newson.
Yeah.
That was the one that I was not expecting you to get.
Yeah. Is to be the third pinch hitter in
he
that game.
He came up and struck out.
Can you give me a position on the third pinch
Pretty hit? Sure he was an outfielder.
Well, I'm not sure about that.
He's always one of my favorite Mariners, Alex Diaz.
Oh, Alex Dirty Diaz, yes.
A-Rod came on as a pinch runner.
Oh, okay.
For Tino Martinez. That probably was earlier than he would have had an at-bat.
And then they moved him to shortstop because somebody else had pinch hit for Soho, right?
Warren Newson.
Yeah, and then who came in to play first? Greg Pirkle?
I think Mike Blowers moved to first.
Okay.
Mike Blowers moved to first.
Soho went to third. Someone went to third?
I have no idea. Oh, Doug Strange went to third.
Doug Strange went to third. Okay.
All right. Felix Fermin played shortstop and then was also pinch hit for by Alex Diaz.
Yeah.
There was a lot going on in that game.
A lot of strategy. #strategy.
Do you remember who started that game?
Who started that game for the Mariners? That would have to be Andy Benes, right?
It would have to be.
Yeah.
So three pitchers pitched in that game. Obviously, Randy Johnson, and Norm Charlton in between. All right. Well, that's not bad. Yeah. You're pretty close to LeBron level here.
Not quite. You know, the thing I can't ever remember is scores. Like, some people who remember, like, scores of games. I remember, I have a vivid memory of this, in eighth grade when the Sonics went to the NBA Finals.
Mm-hmm.
And so game seven, they play in the Western Conference Finals against the Jazz. And I'm in our computer class, which apparently was a thing in eighth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And the teacher asks, like, who can name the score of the game the day before, and I got nothing. I have no idea, even though obviously no one would have cared more about that game possibly than I did, but someone else would have gotten that score right and not me.
Yeah, I mean, you're not good with numbers.
No, not a strong suit.
I feel the same way, though. I can't ever remember the score of anything. Honestly, if you ask me the score of the Seahawks, when they beat the Broncos, it was 43-8, right?
That is correct.
When they lost to the Patriots, when the Super Bowl was canceled, I have no idea what the score of that game was. I could not tell you even roughly.
My guess would be it was a four-point game because they couldn't have won it with a field goal. So, 38-34, I guess, would be my guess.
And then when they played the Steelers, what was that, 31-17 or something?
Yeah, I don't know. That was a long time ago. I know we're going back into this bad memory, but it was 28-24, actually. 28-24.
All I remember is the indignation.
Okay. Can we talk about the Sounders? So, good news. The Sounders won a match.
Oh,
how about that?
Huge.
In Toronto, no less. Getting a big 2-1 victory. Playing without the injured Nicola Ladero after a formation change to play 5-4-1 with a five-player back line, three center backs, Gustav Svensson moving there. And that lineup unexpectedly produced a pair of goals from Will Bruin and the winner from Handwala Buana in the second half, becoming the youngest Sounder ever
toast to Handwala Buana.
A goal. The Sounders were completely dominated in this game in terms of expected goals. 3.4 expected goals for Toronto to 1.2 for Seattle in terms of shot-based expected goals on 538, 2.7 to 0.8 on non-shot goals. And this is the latest reminder that how well you play soccer has almost nothing to do with the outcome of any given match. The Sounders' entire season has really been evidence of that. So after that trip to Toronto midweek, the Sounders came back to the Pacific Northwest on Sunday to play the rival Portland Timbers in, as we discussed last week, the 100th meeting all time going back to 1975 between the two Northwest rivals. Bruin missed that game with heel pain, as well as Osvaldo Alonso, who had a quad strain. Neither of those considered particularly serious. Sounders again going into 5-4-1, and that game plan was working nicely. They were really playing for a draw. And they seemed solidly on their way to achieving a draw.
I like that the Sounders have become an Italian soccer team. I'm into it.
Until
we're used to this.
Center back Kim Keehee, who's moved into the starting lineup with these changes, collided, I can say that word, with Fernando Adi of the Timbers in the 72nd minute and had to leave the match. Brian Schmetzer chose to replace him by moving Jordy Delem back from the defensive midfield rather than bringing in Tony Alfaro, who had started at Toronto. And with that even more makeshift back, center back. It's not a pairing because there are three of them. I guess a trio. A through ball snuck by Gustav Svensson for a Sebastian Blanco goal in the 86th minute, giving the Timbers the 1-0 win that was probably deserved, quite frankly. The Sounders had just 0.3 shot-based expected goals in this game.
Did they take a shot?
They took a couple of them. There was a few shots from outside the box.
Nice.
Quintepsi sailed one over the crossbar. It was, you know, it was a thing. The Sounders, fortunately, with those minor injuries off this weekend, a chance to rest and recuperate and prepare for the remainder of the MLS schedule.
Is the MLS happening during the World Cup? Or are we taking months off here?
Not months. There's a couple-week break. Okay. So we did see that Gustav Svensson was named to Sweden's roster for the World Cup. Roman Torres is on the preliminary 35-man roster for Panama. We'll see how he continues to recover from the injury that has sidelined him for the Sounders.
If he was healthy, he'd be there, though, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Right. I mean, he was the hero of these. He's the reason they're in the World Cup.
They left Roman Torres off.
That'd be pretty harsh. Kim was not selected to the South Korean provisional roster.
So really?
He will not be in the World Cup. There was one more player I saw today, but I can no longer remember who that other player was.
And Dempsey's not.
It's funny because it's real.
It's gonna be a long summer.
Oh, but how about the Italian? Oh no, no. It's the worst World Cup.
I think I'm down on soccer in general because of this. I think it's dragged me down. I'm actually just putting that together right this moment. Why am I so down on soccer? I mean, obviously it's because the Sounders are probably bad.
No, sorry.
The Sounders are pretty good.
I like it. I like it.
But also, it's just that it feels like the World Cup, there's just like nothing to look forward to.
I probably declared that it was going to be the best World Cup ever. It seems like it must have happened.
That's why the Sounders won in Toronto. They just managed to like skate by on the bad luck for the state or for the country of Canada.
Yep.
If they would have been playing Vancouver in this match over the weekend, they would have won 3-0 with like 0.03 expected goals.
That would have been pretty impressive. In happier soccer news, the Seattle Reign got a 4-1 win over Sky Blue FC. Do you want to guess where Sky Blue FC is?
Oh God, didn't we do this last week? We did this.
But there's a different, there's like very similar sounding ones.
I think we did this last week where Sky Blue FC is, and I think I've already forgotten.
No, we did a different one because the team we were talking about was in North Carolina and was not Sky Blue FC.
Okay, so this is, okay, so it's not, I can rule out North Carolina.
Yeah.
Sky Blue FC. I want to say, that's a tough one. You got to think of places where the sky is blue. But a lot of those to me are like states that there would not be a women's soccer team.
This is just very trivia heavy, Pelton Cast.
I know this isn't right, but Omaha?
No. No. New Jersey.
The sky's not blue in New Jersey. I think we had this. I think we actually had that same thing, and I think I forgot it. I think
we didn't. We were talking about the Carolina Courage at that point. Anyways,
I'm pretty sure we were talking about Sky Blue FC.
That was the Reign's first home match since March 24th, believe it or not. Got a brace from Megan Rapinoe, who came back from injury. The Reign now second to the North Carolina Courage with 13 points, 7 back in the standings, but 2 matches in hand, having played only 6 so far. They are second in 538 Soccer Power Index with an 86% chance to make the playoffs, entering their game at home against Chicago.
What is the Chicago nickname?
Chicago is, let's see here. I thought I knew this, but now I can't remember it.
You got the Mariners going to the, what is this?
Oh, that would be the 11th.
The bottom of the 11th. It's actually just a late game in general for
the
me.
Red Stars, Chicago.
Oh, the Chicago Stars, Red Stars.
Named after the stars in the city flag. The Seattle Storm host the Phoenix Mercury in their home opener this Sunday, kicking off the 2018 season, coming off sweeping the Mercury in 2 preseason matchups, one in Phoenix on Saturday. First-round pick Jordan Canada in the 2 preseason games averaged 16 points and 3 steals per game, a very impressive start by her. And I'm excited to really get a look at this new, slightly revamped rotation for the Storm in Dan Hughes' first year as head coach.
And so... Despite how her namesake is faring these last couple of weeks, Jordan Canada looks like the real deal.
Yeah, it's been an excellent start for her. I mean, she's incredibly quick. We knew that about her. Her shooty ability has been a little bit of a surprise to me, even compared to what, you know, I've seen her play in three of the last four Pac-12 tournaments in Seattle. But the one real question I had about her, because she's, you know, she's tiny, is how well she'd finish. And so far, I wouldn't say that's really been an issue. And then defensively, like, she brings a lot of pressure on the ball. So
all right,
that's translated into a lot of turnovers.
Is she starting?
No, she's coming off the bench. Okay. But she'll play at times with Sue Bird in addition to backing her up. And then the other thing the Storm has going for them now is after adding Natasha Howard in a trade with Minnesota over the offseason, they've got kind of two different, very different lineups. They've got, you know, they still have on Saturday used the same starting lineup from last season with Sue Bird, Jewel Lloyd, Alicia Clark, Brianna Stewart, and Crystal Langhorne. But then in their first preseason game before Clark was back from overseas, they started Howard in her place and then moved Brianna Stewart out to small forward at 6'4", where, you know, she's enormous. Those lineups don't have as much shooting, but a lot more size, which, you know, is a weakness for the Storm in the past. And we still haven't seen Courtney Paris, who is going to, you know, really give them a physical presence in the paint that they've lacked in recent seasons. She will be one of the last couple of players coming back from playing overseas in Turkey. So excited to see her. And, you know, I think, I mean, you know, we'll see how this season goes. I certainly expect the Storm to make the playoffs, but I think potentially a chance if they can get things right on the defensive end and, you know, take advantage of the size that they've added and the quickness with Canada for them to be a contender in the WNBA.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to crack into that top two with LA and Minnesota, who have staged some great WNBA finals the last couple of years. But, you know, that next level, I think potentially getting into the top four is realistic for them.
Are there conferences in the WNBA?
There are no longer conferences in the WNBA, which is good because all the best teams are in the West.
I was going to say, those two teams that you named seem like they're probably in the Western Conference. What about a couple of Huskies who were drafted last year? How does Kelsey Plum look for this year?
So she's playing, as we've talked in the past, for Bill Laimbeer now for the Las Vegas Aces, who moved from San Antonio over the offseason. She's also one of these players who's late back from training for the start of training camp, so kind of tough for her not to have the opportunity to get adjusted to the new system.
Because where is she playing?
Turkey.
Okay.
Yeah. And Chantelle Osahor, not in the WNBA.
She's no longer in the league. Yeah. All right, well. Yeah. Are we expecting big things from Kelsey Plum this year, or?
I think better things. She's had, it seems like, a strong season overseas. I mean, clearly the injury that she had at the start of last season in training camp was a big factor in why she struggled so much. So, you know, I think expect her to perform much better. And then the other UW product in the league is, of course, Sammy Wickham on the Storm.
Yeah. I meant to ask this earlier when we were talking about the playoffs, but where do we stand going into the offseason, this offseason for Markel Fultz?
I mean, it's a big offseason for him.
Like, if you had to guess right now, I understand that statistically what happened to him last year is very difficult to project, but if you had to project him next year, what does he look like as a player? Like, what is the upside for Markel Fultz at this point? What's his window for success?
I mean, the upside is he gets the shooting figured out, and we've seen that he can be a useful contributor even when he's really not shooting outside the paint at all. So, you know, I think then he contends for a spot in their starting lineup next year. I mean, I think the realistic expectation is probably more that he's a good reserve than he is a starter next year.
Okay. But we're not giving up on Markel Fultz.
No.
It wasn't.
Absolutely
like,
not.
The games that he played this year, you wouldn't describe as a train wreck.
No, not at the end of the season, no.
Okay. All right. Well, speaking of which, should we talk about UW sports?
We should, because first off, we're both a softball school and a crew school.
Oh, yeah.
UW crew won 9 of 10 races at the Pac-12 championships on Lake Natoma in California last Sunday, taking both the men's and women's conference titles for the second consecutive year. So, I mean, we legitimately are a crew school. But softball, seeded 5th going into the NCAA tournament, will host the regional this weekend, starting Friday against Boise State, Minnesota, and Texas. And then, because they are a top 8 seed, would also host the super regional next weekend if they advance. So, exciting times for UW softball. UW Baseball won 2 of 3 against UCLA over the weekend to tie the Bruins for third in the Pac-12 at 15-9. It would be pretty remarkable if baseball ended up finishing higher in the Pac-12 than softball, which finished fourth despite being seeded fifth in the country, did. The Huskies are at last place Utah this weekend. And then lastly, a little bit of football news on Tuesday is linebacker Camilo Eifler announced that he is transferring, a four-star recruit in 2016 who had yet to crack the two deep after spring ball behind a couple of other sophomores. So perhaps not surprising that he decided to move on and look for more playing time.
You're just not bothered by this at all.
Nope, I'm not.
I mean, hey, look at this.
Oh, there's the, is that the game-winning hit?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Not everything is terrible for the Mariners.
No, I mean, I've been saying it all along. Ewing theory with Robinson Cano.
That was a take I was considering. I was workshopping.
This team's going to be better. I mean, they're in such a good position having a player who was a second baseman before this year just sitting out there in the outfield.
I mean, there's yes, yes, I suppose that's true.
Right. Oh well. Congrats to Guillermo Heredia. I think it's good that they didn't choose to release him for Ichiro. Anyway.
But they did send him down, though.
Yeah, well, he's back now.
He is back.
Ichiro could not withstand Guillermo Heredia.
He could only withstand Guillermo
Heredia. I want to see him run out of the dugout to celebrate with the team, by the way, though. I would like to imagine that it was him, the first on the field. Anyway, you're not bothered by this Camilo Eifler news at all.
By the third-string linebacker transferring?
He still was a highly recruited player who definitely had potential. You just want as much depth as possible. You never want to lose depth.
You pay too much attention to recruiting rankings for individuals.
He just always seemed like he was going to be a player who'd be good.
Based on what?
I don't know. Probably his recruiting rankings.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, okay.
How accurate have recruiting rankings historically been for individuals?
No, I understand. I'm just saying, like...
Then you don't understand.
I mean, the thing is, we trust this Husky defense and the Husky coaching staff so much, especially when it comes to defensive personnel and understanding like who is going to be a good on the field player and fit within this defensive scheme. They're very good at it, right?
Yeah.
So if Camilo Eifler wasn't making the field, it means that he probably was not up to speed.
Yeah.
So this probably isn't that big of a deal. At the same time, you just want as many players as possible.
You know, they're still going to have the same number of players. They get another scholarship now.
But this is a veteran player who's been in the system for
89 players versus 90. Like, I don't think that's a difference.
He's been in the system for 3 years.
And like, couldn't crack the two deep.
He still could have stepped in with experience.
Sure.
I'm just saying, it's not a good thing.
I mean, I'm not cheering about it. I'm just like, saying I said it was the greatest day in Seattle sports history because the Cano news and this, like, man, there's a pretty big difference. Even as little as I care about baseball, Robinson Cano getting suspended, third string linebacker transferring, like, let's all remain calm here.
You were probably on the side of Brandon Mann, so...
I'm definitely on the side of Brandon Mann.
That didn't count as bad news to you. Manning Nelson Cruz. Oh, my God.
It was an accident.
Okay. Anything else on the Huskies?
I think that's it. So let's wrap up quickly by talking about the Seahawks.
Speaking of bad weeks.
Well, you know, we're not going to get into just how bad their week was overall. But in terms of football news, the Seahawks received a visit from Brandon Marshall last week. Oh, or I guess received a visit makes it sound like he just came on his own. They invited Brandon Marshall to visit.
They asked him to come.
They did.
This is the situation that we're in.
Marshall turned 34 in May. He played 5 games for the Giants last season before undergoing season-ending ankle surgery and had a minus 25.1% DVOA.
Oh my God.
He was also below replacement level in 2016, his final season with the Jets. But if you go back to 2015, when he was a spry 31 years old, Brandon Marshall was 11th in the NFL in DR among wide receivers.
Okay. Are we going back to 2015? Wait, is there a time machine?
I mean, if the Seahawks have invented a time machine, they have had a very curious offseason given that knowledge.
Look, Pete Carroll is trying to invent a time machine.
Oh, no. That may be a better use of his time at this point.
Oh, my God. I just, given his antiquated perspective on how an offense should work, It was.
I didn't know that's where you're going with the antiquated perspective here.
It was no surprise to me that he might like the teachings of somebody who's not the most progressive.
Okay.
You know, maybe the newfangled things like passing the ball might be scary to him. Going for it on fourth down might be a little bit scary to him. But you know,
so that's your take here. The Seahawks are interested in Brandon Marshall exclusively as a blocker, given his size. Oh boy, they're just strictly choosing wide receivers now on their ability to run block. It's like an option offense in college football.
God, if only they can bring back Curse. But given that Pete Carroll probably doesn't believe in safe spaces, apparently, can we not have a safe space here? Is there any part of you that feels like maybe because of this offseason, I mean, I know that we've lost some faith in the Pete and John regime. Is there any part of you that is feeling like maybe it's time for a change?
I mean, we're still within... Wait, are we... I guess we're not. No, we're still within the five-year grace period after the Super Bowl, so no.
That's it? You just... The five-year grace period and that's it?
They won the freaking Super Bowl. Like, look, I might give them 10 years.
Wow.
We win a lot of championships around here, last I checked. That's not a thing we do. The Storm have a couple... MLS Cup for the Sounders, but of course their fans want to make changes like 15 minutes after the game. So, I'm in no hurry to push Pete Carroll out the door.
The Mariners' greatest achievement is winning a first round playoff series.
We just reminisced about it. That legitimately just happened.
Oh my God.
Yeah. You know, don't have an NBA team. So, yeah. I mean, I'm not in a hurry for that, no.
Okay. Well, it just felt like this was just another moment in what has been probably the worst offseason for the Seahawks, or being a Seahawks fan since ever.
I mean, it was so much more gradual at the end of like Holmgren era that I don't know if you could point to any individual offseason except maybe them hiring Jim Mora.
the Jim Mora hiring. Which I think if you listen back, we didn't have a podcast at the time, but I'm pretty sure if you listen back to the tapes of our conversations that you recorded, I probably said way too positive things.
Undoubtedly so. You know, I wasn't out on Jim Mora until he actually became the Seahawks
head coach. It was Olinda Mare.
Yeah, oh yeah.
That was the break. Jim Mora, he's probably another Jordan Peterson type.
Okay. Let's not cast aspersions unnecessarily.
He kind of gave, I felt like, Josh Rosen the Olinda Mare treatment also.
A little bit. That definitely happened.
I like that was the moment. Before there were punters that we loved in Seattle, you loved Olinda Mare.
I mean, a lot of people love the previous kicker, too.
I'm sure he's a Jordan Peterson type also.
Okay, let's... this has gone off the rails.
Anything else in the Seahawks?
No, I don't think so.
All right.
It's not much fun to discuss right now. On that note.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.